Welcome to the Mindful Dietitian Podcast. I'm Fiona Sutherland, body inclusive non-diet dietitian and yoga teacher from Melbourne, Australia, and director of the Mindful Dietitian. Please join me as I have important conversations with dietitians and health professionals from all over the world about getting brave and leaning into tough conversations as we cultivate a strong community of practitioners committed to body inclusive practice. We'll talk about mindfulness, we'll dig into diet culture, and we'll explore ways of bringing courageous and important topics into our professional spaces so we can more deeply understand our own experience and make our work more meaningful. Thank you for joining me. Hi, friends, and welcome back to this next episode of the Mindful Dietitian Podcast. Well, 2020, it's been quite the year. And I think that less to say that a lot of us will be very glad to see the back of it. But alongside some of the tougher moments, tougher weeks, tougher months, there's been some great joy and some great connection this year. And certainly Kirsten and I in this episode talk about opportunities for those of us in the anti-diet dietitian business, how there's been a real invitation to pivot our work. And alongside a lot of the challenges, there's been incredible innovation and community orientation towards work that really matters to us and makes a difference in the world. So 2021, I've got some really interesting and exciting projects on the go, the first two of which will be happening in the first couple of months of 2021. The first is that Tracy Brown and I are going to be bringing our four-part live online trauma-informed dietetic care back into the online space. So we just finished our first four-part live online just last week, and it was really sad to say goodbye to this incredible, quite larger than we envisaged, group of dietitians who are really keen to learn all about trauma-informed care, specifically how it shows up for us in dietetic spaces. So we're going to be starting another one of those four-week online courses, and hopefully it'll be in a time zone that suits you. It's going to be earlier in the morning for Australians and New Zealanders, and then afternoon and evening more for Canadians and North Americans. So hopefully wherever you are in the world, that will come at a time that suits you. The second project, which I'm also really excited about, is another second round. And this time it's a collaboration with EDRD Pro, Sumner Brooks's incredible organization, which is designed for health professionals of all descriptions to be able to up-level our experience and insight into all different ways of working in the eating disorder spaces. So we are going to be working alongside Professor Margaret Berman and Dr. Janine Anderson to bring you again another round of the acceptance and commitment therapy training. So this in 2021, this time we're going to be accompanying that with a series of live online opportunities for you all to meet with us and to go through some real life case studies. There is no obligation to participate. I think we all know that feeling when we rock up to a workshop or a training and it becomes time for the role plays or real plays, as sometimes workshop presenters like to speak about it. And we sink in our seat and we think, don't pick me, don't pick me. So there's going to be none of that, nothing obligatory, but we are going to be stepping through some of the primary principles of acceptance and commitment therapy and hope it brings this amazing modality to life for more people. So you can find more information about that over on the EDRD Pro website, which is www.edrdpro.com. Right, so I've got another few things on the boil, but oh my gosh, including a book. So this is a book called Vitamin A to Z, and some of you I know will have a pack of my cards, Vitamin A to Z cards, which I produced a couple of years ago. And it's really an offshoot of of the cards in lots of ways, and we're stepping people through from A to Z in a totally no BS fashion, all the ways in which we can nourish ourselves with joy and peace and mindfulness and compassion and all those things that really help us to show up in the world as real life human beings, but also that we're able to role model ways of being in the world that make sense to us. So I hope you really enjoy the book as well. So a little bit more about this podcast. My guest today is Kirsten Meyer. She is an incredible dietitian, anti-diet dietitian, and anti-diet content marketer, and also a digital projects manager for ANZ, which is the Australian New Zealand Academy of Eating Disorders. As you can hear, she is a wearer of many hats. But what ties all these roles together is Kirsten's deep sense of purpose to bring down diet culture and help folks heal their relationships with food and body. So Kirsten's anti-diet work started during her dietetic studies, but she's also a former journalist with a 15-year career in marketing and communications. So Kirsten has used her writing background to gain work experience creating content for non-diet dietitians in Australia, New Zealand, and in the UK, and continues to do so today. Kirsten says, regardless of which hat she's wearing, she's determined to make a meaningful contribution towards dismantling diet culture and creating connected, inclusive communities. I really appreciate Kirsten's incredible communication style, which comes through really clearly here as we're talking. So she's not only great at content creation, she's also great at bringing these ideas to life in ways that really make sense and are super, super helpful. So I hope you really enjoy this episode of the Mindful Dietitian Podcast, and that you are able to finish off this year in any way that feels nourishing and helpful and restful and anything else that you need. I really look forward to continuing to connect with you all in 2021 and beyond. And in the meantime, take care. Hey, Kirsten, and welcome to the Mindful Dietitian Podcast. It is beyond amazing to be speaking with you today.
Oh, thank you, Fee, and same to you.
Well, we're going to be having a little bit of a different conversation today, because not only are you a non-diet dietitian, but you're also a content marketer. And arguably, it could be said that these two things are a fantastic match, particularly in the age where we are aiming to communicate on so many different levels with a bunch of different people about anti-dieting, about health at every size, about weight inclusivity, about, I don't know, medical nutrition therapy, dietetic care, woof, and the list goes on. So this is going to be a really interesting conversation, no doubt. So I'm really curious to hear a bit more and for you to share with our audience about your pathway. Like, how did this dual pathway come to be?
I actually don't even know sometimes, because I started my career as a journalist, and 4 years ago, there's no way I would have thought that I was going to be a dietitian. Becoming a dietitian is something that is very, very new. So having started out as a journalist, moving into this work has been interesting. But I guess I started out in journalism because I have a very strong social justice backbone, and I really enjoy connecting with people, telling stories, telling other people's stories, elevating other people's voices, and advocating for other people who may not have that ability to do so. And leaning into that social justice side is why I think my pathway then went into politics. So I worked in the political sphere for quite a number of years in media management. And while all this was happening, I traveled for a little while, continuing to work in government and politics, and ended up in London and in Canada for a little while, and found myself in corporate marketing, and ended up realizing that I didn't enjoy multiple minus 30 degree days in Canada. So found myself back in Australia and back to corporate marketing. And I think it was sort of, I'd been in this career for 12 years, but there was something that I just needed to fix, quote unquote. And that was that I had an unhealthy relationship with food. And this had been something that had been going on in the background for a number of years. And I had sought some help from a dietitian a number of years ago, and it just wasn't helpful. It was from a place that did more harm than good. So feeling as though I wasn't able to seek professional help, I thought, oh, I will quote unquote go about fixing myself. And that's predominantly why I moved into to study an undergraduate degree in nutrition and dietetics. And my first year of my dietetics degree, I actually queried whether that was even going to be the right pathway for me, because it was coming from quite a weight-centric perspective, which just was not helpful for me at all, having the unhelpful relationship with food that I had. And thank goodness, in my second year of my degree, I stumbled across the non-diet approach, because that was absolutely what got me through for the rest of my degree. And I remember it was actually Fiona Willer's non-diet approach guidebook for dietitians. That was the first book I read, funnily enough. And as a second year dietetic student, a lot of it did go over my head with the nutrition care process and that sort of thing, but it was her foreword in the beginning of the book that I just instantly connected with, and it just resonated so strongly with me that I finally went, oh, this is where I'm going. This is what's going to get me through this degree. And this is absolutely how I can pay back to other people and help them help them not go through what I went through. So yeah, 4 or so years later, it took me a little longer because I had a baby during my degree, and I graduated last year, and this year has been, well, this year, and it's meant that what I initially thought I'd be doing didn't turn out that way. So I had to think about what I was going to do for work, and I sort of thought, I've got to be able to find something that I can do that's going to allow me to show or use my previous career, the skills that I've got from my previous career. And I found that quite a few of our colleagues had questions around marketing and enhancing their online presence, particularly from earlier this year, realizing that telehealth was going to be a huge part of their practice, realizing that online marketing was going to start to be a much more important part of their day-to-day business. And all of a sudden I was helping them and providing advice, and I thought, oh, there must be some more people who are requiring this assistance as well. And so now here I am, sort of trying to combine anti-diet marketing with anti-diet work.
Yeah, well, the role that you play in supporting those of us who have been more clinically trained is so, so useful and helpful, because a lot of us don't have that business-oriented or marketing kind of background. And so to have somebody that you can work alongside that knows more about the business and the marketing and the content side of things allows us to really be free to work alongside our clients and communities with our passion, and then to bridge that gap between, I know what I'm trying to say, but then when I try to say it, it's not landing in the way maybe that I intended. Or it could also be said that a lot of what we're trying to communicate, it's very complex. It's not very simple at all. It's not only nuanced, but it's also, for a lot of people, it's flying in the face of what we have always been led to believe about food and eating and our bodies and relationships and all kinds of things. So I think, you know, my experience with you has been that you've been able to bring to life what we are actually trying to say, but in a way that lands and makes sense for people at the level where people are ready. Oh my goodness, I'm so grateful to you and to other content creators, because that's not our strength. We really need you. So just wanted to say, you know, a huge thank you to you.
Oh, thank you. But it's really difficult because we're competing, or we're communicating in such a noisy landscape. We have got nutrition and health messages just flying at us from left, right, and center, from people who may have qualifications, who may not have qualifications. And, you know, we're competing in that space. And also, when we look at what people, what our, you know, audiences are searching for, if they don't know about non-diet, if they don't know about health at every size, they're not able to find us because they're not searching for it. And it is very difficult in, from a social media perspective for us to start appearing in other people's social media reels if those people aren't searching for that. If they're in diet culture world, if they're following people that are talking about diet culture-y things, that's what their feed is predominantly going to be made up of. So it can be difficult for us to reach those people who are not aware from about our work.
That's actually a really interesting point. So if we were to think about, for example, the stages of change model, so Prochaska and Di Clemente, you know, many, many decades old now, this is not a new kind of thing. And we were to think about who we are trying to reach. I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on, you know, who are the people that we're trying to reach? Because I suppose I'm thinking, wondering, and I'd be so curious about your thoughts on this. If we take a bit of a scattergun approach and try and reach everybody, I'm imagining that we actually reach nobody at all. I mean, not in an effective way. So who is it that we're really trying to reach with our non-diet messaging or with our anti-diet messaging or with our weight inclusive messaging, however we describe our own practice, would you say?
Oh, this is such a key part of anybody looking to really get strategic in their marketing work, is really understanding who it is that they're trying to talk to, because we know that there are people at different stages of change. So if we were to look at that model, I would say that for most of us who are trying to generate new clients in a private practice, we're probably talking to people who are in that contemplation preparation phase. You may be talking to pre-contemplation, but those people are those who I was just sort of talking to, you know, pre-contemplation. They're not really aware of Hayes. They're not really aware of the literature or our language. So it's difficult to get in front of them. So who we're really talking to are audiences who are most likely in that contemplation stage. So they're the ones who may not necessarily be aware of weight inclusive care, but they're genuinely interested in caring for people. And they're aware of, you know, like the social activism, and they're probably more aligned to Hayes principles. So if we were to think about the sorts of content that we would provide to that audience, that's really about increasing their knowledge on weight inclusive practice. So providing some really easy resources, helping to add to their curiosity on what this practice is about. I work with someone who this is their target audience, and she's really focused on providing like video series that's just really like personable, authentic, genuine communication about what her work is, how that can benefit them, and you know, just sort of easy resources as to not overwhelm at that point, and just like gentle. And then if we were to look at someone else's audience who is more in that preparation phase, who is willing to do some work and who's, you know, ready to potentially, you know, get in there and start doing some work. More resources, but making those resources probably a bit more in depth. So pointing to some more literature that's really going to increase their knowledge. But again, trying not to overwhelm, and I guess, yeah, just being really sort of compassionate that people in this sort of phase, you know, may still sort of hold some ambivalence towards doing this. So just being really thoughtful about language and showing compassion towards our audience when it comes to providing that content.
Yeah, I really love that idea of being quite specific about who you are speaking to. One of the criticisms that's been leveled at non-diet dietitians has been the kind of simplifying of ideas, which are really rooted in fat activism, in queer activism, and are decades old now. And I think what you're also pointing out is that for people who have no idea of the history, for example, of body positivity or fat activism or health at every size, that starting where people are at allows us to be able to communicate in ways that can start the ball rolling and can pique curiosity, like you say, and encourage people to develop even a foundational understanding before maybe developing a deeper or more nuanced understanding. So yeah, I really appreciate and like that idea. I think that there is always a place to be building a foundation without necessarily dumbing it down or making it seem as if it's some or misrepresenting it, I guess is probably a better phrase. That there is a place. Interestingly, I'm curious to ask you, it just occurred to me then that I wonder if when we're communicating kind of foundational ideas or the the kind of the concrete slab, if you will, of the house that we're building and we're communicating. I wonder if our understanding and our insight almost needs to be more advanced and more in depth so that we can capture the essence of what we're trying to say in a way that isn't misrepresentative. I don't know. I'm curious about what you think.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, isn't it? Because we've got really amazing palatable resources like Poodle Science is, I love that video so much in terms of having something that's going to capture what, most of us have short attention spans these days. So something that's going to be engaging, entertaining, and not going to go beyond someone's, sort of smallish attention span these days. But, yeah, as to whether it needs to go more in depth and really sort of challenge someone's thinking and knowledge, I'm not sure. But this is the beautiful thing about content marketing is you can test and experiment. Like it's not something to perfect. It's not something that, there's a one size fits all approach. This is, you test different things and you analyze it, analyze it. You see how it performed. And if it didn't do well, you can walk away and go, okay, I'm not going to try that again. Or if it's something that you found had really great engagement and you had a lot of comments around it, or it evoked some questions, amazing. You know that that's the appetite, and you know that that's what your target audience is really wanting from you. And I think the more we engage with our target audience, the more we understand who our target audience is. Can you then really start to identify the sorts of content that's going to really land with them? And I think sometimes the best thing we can do is just straight out ask, what do they want? What are their concerns? What is it that they're wanting to learn more about? I see lots of people asking, if there was sort of one question that you could ask me, what is it that you would ask me? And there's lots of people on social media doing really great things with, sort of ask me anything sessions. And, that's really sort of helping people or helping our colleagues really engage with their audience and providing content that's helpful and is really landing.
Oh, I love that. So, do you mind speaking a little bit more to engagement? Because it seems as though in the content creation world, that reaching the people who you want to reach is all about this word, engagement. So, can you tell us a little bit more about what this actually means and maybe ways? You gave us some examples there about the, ask me anything type of examples, but what are some really great ways that we can engage with our audiences?
Well, engagement's definitely a two-way street. So if we're putting our content there where we may not be getting, I know it's not all about likes, but sometimes if we're not getting any likes, that might be a sign that it's not really engaging well. But anything that you're looking for, if you've asked a question and you're looking for answers, that's a great way to realize that you've had engagement. If you've created a free download, like a resource or something, and you've sent people to a landing page to download that resource, that's great engagement. So I guess it depends on your goal for that piece of content. So I think, you know, having an overarching goal of increasing engagement may not be the best kind of goal. It may be more helpful to think about really specific goals that you're trying to reach. So if you're looking to grow your email database, having a goal around, I'm looking to increase my email database by X percent across X months, and then thinking about the content that's going to help you do that, and then realizing, oh, I've been able to reach this goal of increasing my email database. Oh, look, I've got engagement.
Yeah, that is amazing. And what I have learned during 2020 is that being able to track the way that people are interacting with you and interacting maybe with what you offer, maybe your business, however you want to do those metrics, is actually incredibly fascinating. I never thought I'd be super interested in that kind of stuff. But, you know, coming from it, from a non-perfectionistic, non-kind of pursuing an attachment way of being, it's actually really, really interesting just to see what people are really wanting to know more about it. I must say that it was a bit unexpected. So what do you think that people who are interested in non-diet approaches, what do you think it is that attracts people to the work that we do?
Well, not sure if I could pinpoint exactly what it is that attracts them to our work, but I know that if we are putting our consistent anti-diet messaging out there, we are going to attract people who are more likely to want to engage in anti-diet work. And it's interesting to look at, if we were going to look at search engine optimization, so how well our websites are ranking in search engine results. If we were to look at the sorts of things that people are searching for online, we know that weight loss is absolutely a huge search term at the moment in comparison to some other terms that we may be using. So if we're putting out content there on healing our relationship with food, you know, if we were to compare those two search phrases, weight loss versus healing a relationship with food, absolutely weight loss is going to have higher number of search results per month than healing relationship with food. And despite that, I would hope that we're not going into that weight loss space and talking about weight loss to bring people in. And it is difficult because on one hand, people think, oh, but if I'm talking about weight loss, I'm going to bring them in and then I'm going to be able to show them the anti-diet side and I'm going to potentially convert them and bring them across. But from what I've been reading and from what I've seen, we're actually more likely to attract people who are more willing to engage in anti-diet work if we're putting out the anti-diet messaging. They're more likely to resonate with that. Our language is more in line with their intrinsic values, most likely. So it's difficult. And again, I think it comes back to testing things. So if we know that, you know, we put out a blog on how to heal your relationship with food, have a look at how many people clicked on that link. See how many people, you know, were interested in that blog. And, you know, you might be surprised that more people were interested in that blog than what you probably expected.
Yeah, that is really interesting. So we're really talking about monitoring and tracking in a way that allows you to kind of assess how things are going over time. And then to be able to, I guess, shift and move, especially when different topics pop up, and that we're able to be flexible and agile when it comes to our messaging, rather than, you know, bunkering down with a year's worth of content and and so forth. Although for some people, including myself, that feels like a dream. It's like, oh my goodness, if I had a year's worth of content, that would be,
oh
be
my
amazing.
Gosh, even a six month content right. calendar planned and ready to go is, gosh, doesn't that just make you feel like you've just hit all your goals for the year? And, you know, while that is amazing, at the same time, it can be really helpful to definitely have some sort of some go-to topics that you know don't have sort of any time frame attached to them. But something that I like to do, sorry, I'm just hijacking that question, but I love the idea of planning, and content calendars are absolutely a favorite organizational tool of mine. And what I really like to do is definitely have content planned out for as many weeks as you know that you've got ideas for, but then also having a look at what else is going on in that year. So if we know that there's annual awareness day is going on, so we know that, you know, weight stigma awareness week is this week and eating disorders awareness week is this week, and have those in your content calendar as well, so that you know that you can plan some content around those days, which are time sensitive and topical. Because like you were just sort of alluding to, definitely when we're agile and we can talk about things that are topical or they're going on in the news and we can comment or talk about something that everybody else is talking about, absolutely, that's likely to get more engagement because everybody else is talking about it at the same time.
Yeah, that's it. So really what you're saying is being able to have a bit of a framework of the kind of topics that we would like to communicate on and strengthen our messaging, and then also to be able to have enough room and space for things as they pop up. So if there's a media release or if there's a particular as you say, like an awareness week or something in the media that we would like to respond to, and we'd like to do so in a prompt kind of way, that that we can still do so around kind of the framework of our plan.
Correct. And sometimes it can feel a little overwhelming trying to plan all of this, but I think it's important to know that while it's great to connect, to create lots of different content, we don't have to then scatter that content across multiple platforms as well. Because there's sort of the idea of we need to be consistently publishing content if we want to sort of, you know, increase, talk to more people and increase awareness and have our message out there. But it doesn't have to be across multiple platforms if your target audience is not on those platforms. And I think this is another thing that a lot of people can feel overwhelmed by, is that if they do a blog around, you know, an awareness day, they feel that that would then require a social media, an Instagram post, a tweet, a Facebook post, something on their LinkedIn page, something somewhere else, something in their newsletter. And having that idea can be quite overwhelming, but if we've got it really clear in our mind who it is that we're communicating with, where it is that they get their information from, it can make life a little bit easier. So if we know that our target audience is predominantly on Instagram, that maybe if they're more on Instagram and maybe not on Twitter, don't do Twitter. If your audience is not on there, there's no point in stretching yourself so thin that you have to communicate across multiple platforms if you're unlikely to reach your audience. And I'm just sort of talking about this from a time management perspective, so that you're feeling not so not stressed, but it can cause a lot of stress and overwhelm. So if you're someone that is very time poor, running a business, trying to do your marketing, you know, as well as all the other things that life throws at us, just pick your top or your key channels where you know where your target audience is and just focus on those.
I really love that idea because as somebody who has played around with a few different content marketing strategies, you're absolutely right. It can get really overwhelming. And the truth is that especially when you first start off, you're not sure how you're going. And so, we might ask, well, is this going to get me good bang for my buck, really, in terms of maybe it's our literal buck or maybe it's our energy buck, you know? No, I really love that idea, and there's no need to kind of spread ourselves so, you know, thinly across the platform. So we're really not, I call it the scattergun approach, you know, where you're just throwing stuff out there and hoping something will land, right? So on that note, I'm curious to hear, what would be your recommended content creation platforms, if you have any ones that you would recommend?
Do you mean in terms of like social media and website? And yes. So again, I think it's all about where your target audience is going to be. So going back to when we're defining our target audience, thinking about their stages of change, really thinking about where are they and thinking about who are they, where do they get their information from, what are their concerns, and when we realize what their concerns are, we can then start to figure out where they would be getting their information from, the platforms that they're going to be hanging out on, and then just pick those. So if you know that the majority of your target audience may be on Facebook, maybe just spend most of your time on Facebook. It's difficult because most people are on social media. So you know that you're either going to be either Instagram or Facebook or both.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think you can start to make a delineation between like those two platforms versus Twitter versus LinkedIn versus trying to do some media, some news media. And then also on top of that, thinking about your website as well and the role that your website plays in your content.
And don't forget TikTok.
TikTok. I often forget TikTok, and that's just because I'm showing how old I am. But my gosh, aren't there some incredible dietitians doing their thing on TikTok?
So innovative. I mean, yeah. TikTok is not for me. It's for my kids. But I have just been so impressed with people's creativity and their capacity to be able to turn a non-diet or anti-diet message into like a dance with captions. I'm like, oh my goodness, if there is something that we are, it is innovative. We will go to great lengths to be able to reach people in a way that lands with them. I mean, TikTok is actually a really good example. That, for example, I don't use TikTok. I'm not super interested in it. But when I see people have posted their TikTok videos, for example, on Instagram, I think to myself, that is clever. That's very clever. So anyway, it's so interesting.
And you secretly think, do I have one of those in me?
And then I quickly think, no. No.
Yeah, it's been like, talk about, you know, not only coming up with the creativity and thinking about what's going to be something that's new and, you know, that you can fit into 15 seconds, no less, but also the editing. You know, I think, but not only on TikTok, but even just Instagram stories and people's ability to just roll with this, you know, new technology and new ways of communicating in like really creative ways is fantastic. But again, I will say that this is what can potentially cause a bit of overwhelm, because we have all these, you know, really fun, creative platforms that you can spend so long pulling something together. And I think that's where we run the risk of derailing being strategic and sort of starting to spend more time doing that than you otherwise probably would have liked to, which then again, we kind of have to come back and go, okay, is this actually going to be landing with my target audience? And most of the time, like Instagram stories, if your target audience on Instagram stories are amazing. Instagram lives are amazing. That's just been, I love live piece to camera. I think that is just the most authentic, genuine way that you can see people communicate. You know, as much as I love watching videos, sometimes when I see a really polished video, I often think, I wonder how many takes it took for that to be done. And it's really high quality, but I want to see someone's really raw communication style and what is the message that you're trying to get across? And I personally really connect with that a lot.
Yes. In fact, one of your latest Instagram posts was on what you call blooper reels. And I just really appreciated that because it's exactly what you're speaking to now. And that it's really showing up just as you are and really being an authentic human, and speaking from the heart. And I think that, for example, someone like Anna Sweeney is somebody whose Instagram stories are just so impressive. They're so genuine. They're funny. They're really relatable. She knows her audience and speaks to that audience and does so really consistently. I could use 20 different people as examples, but Anna is somebody who she's not scared of a blooper reel. She's bringing it and keeping it real. So, what do you think, maybe some tips for people that feel anxious about, getting up close and familiar with imperfection and their own personal blooper reel? What are some tips you might have?
I think just recognizing that we're all human and that all of us don't have all the answers at the one time. I mean, right now I'm sitting here going, oh, actually I will not provide you with an articulate, polished answer. This is me talking on the fly and this is me being my raw, genuine self without having a script in front of me. And I think breaking down those walls and showing other humans that you too are human, even though you are, a health professional and you're also a human that has, I think that will help other people really resonate with their humanness as well.
Yeah, I love that. Just showing up and role modeling what it, I want to be careful with using the word what it looks like, because we're not necessarily talking about physical appearance here, but practicing what it looks like to really to mess something up or to stumble over words or to say and all those things that for some reason we've been led to believe that makes it wrong or it makes it not good enough or some kind of bullshit like that. We've been taught since we were really young, don't say don't say use your words, blah blah blah. So I think and in the highly polished world of social media, it can really kind of suck people down a pretty dark tunnel, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And I think as dietitians, we do tend to be more on that perfectionist side, so that's more we're probably more likely to be on that side than the other side. It's tricky because Instagram is such a visual platform, and that is why it's so popular, because it's full of really beautiful imagery and it is something that, it is enjoyable to look at. Aesthetically, it is, beautiful to look at. But at the same time, we don't want to keep showing just the highlight reels, because it's not the real world. And it can start to make us start comparing ourselves to something that's not realistic.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, comparison is one of the things that can lead us to become dreadfully unhappy and disconnected from others. And in that disconnection, feeling less than. And therefore, you're constantly chasing and pursuing that sense of good enough. So it's, social media is so incredible in so many ways. And at the same time, we have some pretty powerful research emerging now about social media and how it can also really contribute to, lower levels of mental health. So it's, I really appreciated this conversation, because I think what you've really spoken to here is how we can encourage the smart and insightful and compassionate use of social media by delivering messages and engaging with people in ways that encourage them to take really, really good care of themselves. So that's what I love about your style of content creation and content marketing, for sure.
Well, I'm probably not a very good example. I'm not a great role model when it comes to content marketing, and I'm not a prolific social media user, because I personally, from a personal perspective, I don't really enjoy it. I don't love it. But from a content marketing perspective, I love it. And I think it is just so valuable. And I love looking at the connections and the networking and the conversations that are had between people who would otherwise probably never meet in real life, but they're able to connect through these platforms. I've just lost my train of thought.
That's okay, because I do have one. Actually, I've got two more questions for you. Does that feel okay?
Yes, but I feel like I was coming to a point with that last around social media and...
So you're not a big fan of social media use yourself, but you really enjoy the content creation
side of things. Gosh, it's just,
here's
the blooper reel, live in the flesh.
Yeah, I never worry about that kind of thing. And people who listen to this podcast will know that, you know, we just carry on. And it's almost like, you know, one of our colleagues actually said to me a while ago now, but she said to me, you know what I really like about listening to your podcast? I literally feel as if I'm eavesdropping in a conversation in a coffee shop between you and your guest. And I was like, well, you know, that is high praise actually, because it really is like you and I are just talking like we normally would talk. And it's a bit of a pity that we didn't remember to bring our glasses of wine, but anyway, that's for another time perhaps. But yeah, you go, there you go. We are role modeling.
Oh, I love that so much. Oh, that's what I was going to say around role modeling. Thank you. Here we go. So I was just going to say, I'm probably not a great role model with content marketing, but that's because most of my target audience is Instagram. Yes. But my goals is not to create a massive following. I don't have goals of needing to grow a database. I don't have goals of needing to create a mass following. My goals is to, I guess, put information out there and awareness and education through my platform to people who engage with my content. So whether that's 5, 50, 500 people, it doesn't really matter. But what does matter is that the people who are seeing my content and receiving it are people who are going to resonate with it, and it's going to be helpful and meaningful too.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually a really good example there that people won't always have built business building strategies. Sometimes it will simply be awareness raising and being able to participate in contributing to the greater good in terms of food and body image healing, which brings me to another question, which is, you know, you mentioned right at the start about your passion for social justice. So I'm really interested in how those of us with significantly more privilege in the world can really integrate social justice into our content creation, and how we can be really thoughtful about, you know, about equity and about raising the voices of others and all those things that social media gives us these amazing opportunities to introduce our audience to other people whose voices they may or may not be similar. They may or may not even do what we do, but to kind of to contribute towards that greater good of equity and inclusion and inclusivity. And that was a much, much longer question than I had intended. My question, summarized, is how can we be thoughtful about integrating social justice principles or ideas or our passions into our content creation?
I think first and foremost, and this is something that I have loved from Lindley Ashline, that she's creating stock photos and imagery for body size diversity and acceptance. I think just having diversity in our imagery, showing that there are more than, you know, what is, you know, there's more to just than just the thin ideal, which is what we see in a lot of our imagery, particularly when we go to use stock photos for our website content for our blogs. You go to search for, you know, happy woman sitting at table or, you know, something to that. And, you know, the results that appear just do not show body diversity. So I think first and foremost, show diversity in your account. Second, continue using haze and anti-diet messaging. Really stay true to those principles. I shouldn't say this. I can't sort of say don't do this, don't do that. But for me, I find fence sitting confusing. I think if there are people who are sort of fence sitting or messaging, sort of saying that they practice health at every size, weight inclusive practice, but are still sort of talking about weight management, weight loss, in, I find that confusing. So I think if we're really going to be true to haze and to anti-diet messaging, we need to sort of follow haze principles in our language and in our content. Language is so important, making sure that we're aware of staying neutral in our language, particularly when we're talking about food. No good or bad, none of this sort of binary thinking in our language around food. I think also just being really aware of acknowledging our own privilege as well. If there's an opportunity to acknowledge our privilege, I think that's always a good thing, just so that, I think just acknowledging our privilege when we've got the opportunity is important.
I think that's lovely, because acknowledging our privilege can sometimes be confused for boasting about how we've got to where we are. And it's not the intention. And I will say, of course, that intention is not the same as impact and how our communications land, but that the intention of stating where it is suitable and impactful, our privilege, the point of it is to acknowledge that of our, not our own doing, that we have found ourselves having opportunities and doors opened in the world that we recognize and acknowledge are not available to other people, and that we are committed to making a contribution to open those doors for others, as it has been for us too. So I think you're absolutely right. I really love all those points. I think that's great. The only other one is trying to mention people, for example, in Instagram stories, like people's books or other people's podcasts or other people's accounts where possible. And for the explicit purposes of sharing other people's voices, not to garner favor from that person, for example, but to do so in a really authentic way that encourages genuine engagement, not only with your audience, but also with other communities as well, because we've all, quote unquote, been there, done that, in terms of maybe weight-centric care or, whitewashed nutrition, and subjects like that. So it's so content creation and communication are such powerful ways that we can bring our values, something that we didn't talk about and I would love to talk to you about in just a moment, our values and our mission and our dreams, our wishes for the world, really a lot more front and center. So let's move into talking a little bit about values and how we can integrate values work into our communication. So there is a really interesting concept called values priming, which essentially is aiming to engage people's intrinsic values, and that is mostly from the sectors of care, compassion, and others, other of the benevolent areas of values, and the second area is justice, particularly social justice, so fairness and equity and inclusivity. So values priming is really this sense of front loading our communications and integrating values-based messaging through our communications. So I understand quite thoroughly about values, but I think what you're so great at, Kirsten, is how we can be really strategic and smart and yet really aligned and focused in our messaging. So when it comes to kind of front loading with values or connecting with the intrinsic values of other people, what are some ideas that you have about how we could even get started around this?
Well, definitely, if we go back to thinking about our target audience, and we know that predominantly our target audience may have a little ambivalence around anti-diet and the anti-diet work that we do, one way that we can communicate to them is to try to activate values around self-compassion. And it can be really difficult to do that if we come at them with lots of facts and hard data around, you know, pursuit of weight loss and sort of, you know, why pursuit of weight loss is harmful. Whereas if we start with something that they're going to share a feeling on, so we know that we all hold intrinsic values in some way. We all share intrinsic values of self-compassion. We don't always prioritize those values in our life, but we know that they're there somewhere. So if we can try to activate that self-compassion value, that might be a really good opener to help us have that conversation around anti-diet and our Hayes work. So if we were thinking around, you know, if we wanted to have a conversation about weight-based goals, for example, we could potentially sort of open the conversation with, you know, everybody deserves self-compassion. You know, that's something that deep down we all believe. This person, you know, who's ambivalent about still pursuing weight loss may not have that value as a priority right now because of diet culture. But if we can sort of help them activate that value of self-compassion, that might start to help them be a bit more open to having an anti-diet conversation. So we can sort of, you know, open with that and, you know, continue on with things like, you know, we're compassionate towards other people, but why don't we share that same compassion? You know, why don't we show ourselves that same compassion? You know, and I'm sure that that person would probably agree to some point. And keeping that conversation going around that self-compassion piece, you know, self-compassion is about treating ourselves with self-care, being kind to ourselves, caring for the body that we have now, sort of that idea. And, you know, that I think is much more helpful to someone than maybe starting a conversation saying pursuing weight loss is not going to work for you, or, you know, doesn't work for the majority of people, when this poor person is completely wrapped up in diet culture, is completely wrapped on holding on to this idea that they're going to change their body and they're going to, you know, they're continuing to pursue this thin ideal. Whereas if we kind of come at them from this angle of self-compassion, we can then start to talk more about what that means in terms of our anti-diet work.
I really appreciate that. And I think that this kind of conversation around shared values could be also really helpful for our colleagues as well. So when we are having conversations with our colleagues or other health professionals, and maybe we're not exactly on the same page. So using shared values, for example, of compassion, of respect, of care, I mean, we'd be hard pressed to find, for example, a doctor who would admit, or who would actually say, I don't care about my patients, or I don't feel compassion towards my patients, or I don't respect my patients. The truth is that sometimes I think over time, especially when we have been in healthcare for a number of years, working within perhaps a system which is really tough, that our deepest values and the way that we wish to show up for others and the way we wish to show up for ourselves and our colleagues can get a little bit, can get a little bit swept under the carpet and can get a little bit swept away. So I really like the idea of being able to connect with others in shared intrinsic values and being able to communicate that in our letters and being able to communicate that in our conversations, whether we have opportunities to speak with groups of people or speak with colleagues. One idea that I often start with, like, especially if I'm talking to a little bit of an unknown audience, like I just don't know where they sit in terms of weight stigma or weight inclusive care. If I've got a little bit of no idea, one of the ways I'll start off is by acknowledging that everyone in this room cares deeply about other human beings, and how grateful I am that we're all here as such caring people. And what that can do, I don't believe that in doing that, I'm coming at it very, very genuinely. It's not manipulation. It's not being dishonest. What it is doing is almost strategically bringing their brain into a space where we are on the same page before it's likely that I might start encouraging you to press your edges. For example, if we're talking about weight stigma, or if we're talking about weight-centric care, or, you know, and the shift to weight-inclusive care, or something, you know, that could feel a little bit more challenging for people. So I really love values work, and I love those examples you gave of, you know, speaking to our clients and how we can also do that with other colleagues and health professionals.
Particularly because with colleagues, it can be, I could imagine, just devastating to start to understand anti-diet work and the difference between that versus maybe weight-centric work that they've been practicing for so long, and then just start to realize the potential harm that may have occurred throughout their years of practice. I could imagine that would just be, a really, really difficult situation to go through.
Oh, absolutely. Particularly because our usual human response, when we feel like we've done something wrong, we will have a big, big body memory emerge that will bring up a lot of shame. And when human beings feel shame, we tend to get quite activated. Our sympathetic nervous system comes online. And if we can't hold that, we're going to shut down and avoid and become defensive. So defensive can be a bit of a fight kind of energy, I guess, that sympathetic energy. And what that does is really closes our window and really blocks us from being able to take in information, even useful information, or even kind of baseline, kind of simplistic information. You know, as soon as we feel shame, our usual human tendency is a sympathetic charged response, and we feel really unable to listen. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't communicate in ways that encourage people to press their edges. It doesn't mean that we let people off the hook, but it doesn't mean that we confuse the feeling of shame with the intention of shame. The felt sense of shame doesn't necessarily mean that the person meant to inflict that on you. Sometimes it does, and that is just, I mean, that's revolting no matter how you turn that dice. Shame never works. It never changes behaviors. It doesn't change anything. It just sends everything underground. But that when our intentions are coming from a caring and respectful and compassionate place, that we can communicate in ways that that engage rather than push people away. And sometimes it's just, that just takes time. Oh, do you know, I have really, really enjoyed this conversation. I'm fascinated with marketing and content creation and communication. I didn't expect that, you know, 20 years into my career, I'd be so fascinated by this. I mean, by the way, not thinking of a career change, but it's really, I think this year, especially with everything that, you know, 2020 has been, it's been this really amazing eye-opening experience to understand really more the complexities of the ways that we communicate when hard stuff happens or when situations change. So so thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Yeah, it's definitely been the year of the pivot, hasn't it?
And yes, I love that. The year of the pivot. Oh my God, yes.
And just the plethora of information and the online courses to, you know, self-teach SEO and also, you know, paid Google AdWords. And, you know, there is just so much information out there that, you know, has been, I guess, worthwhile for some people that have needed to really pay more attention to their online presence, but then maybe a little overwhelming for some other people.
Oh God, yeah, definitely.
I think we've all become content marketers though. Like everyone can call themselves a content marketer, I feel.
I guess.
Loosely.
Very generous of you. So Kirsten, let people know where they can find you, because I know I see everything that you do on Instagram and so where can people find you?
Oh, so I'm really only on Instagram, and it's nourish.digital.content. And then I also have a little website that you can go and have a wee read of if you want, which is nourishdigital.com.au.
And that is wonderful. So great to have this conversation with you, Kirsten. We first connected when you were that's very dismissive. My apologies. When you were a dietetic student and you reached out and we started having conversations all the way back then. So it's just been an absolute pleasure to get to know you.
Oh, thank you. I think it was, I think I wrote a little blog.
You
talking
did.
About my experiences as a student trying to learn with my haze lens on.
You did. That was a beautiful piece. I'm going to try and dig that one up.
Oh, that was one of the hardest blogs I've ever written, because I was so conscious of what I was saying and not wanting to assume anything, because I was only very new into my course, so I didn't want to make it seem as though I wasn't going to learn haze and I wasn't going to learn the non-diet approach. So I was that was a difficult one.
Yeah, well, you did a magnificent job. I remember that. Yeah, so I definitely will dig that up and share that. And embarrass you.
Yeah, that's okay. We'll just put
that one. We'll just leave that one in the archive.
Yeah.
Archive for a reason.
Yes. No, nothing's archived online.
Oh, don't say that. There's a tip for everybody.
Yes.
Thank you so, so much. You are an incredibly generous, kind, compassionate human who brings so much to the world, and I'm just super grateful to know you.
Oh, thank you. And same at you too.
Oh, thank you. And look forward to staying in touch. And I can't wait to share this conversation with people.
Thanks, B.
Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon.
Well, that's our episode of the Mindful Dietitian interview series for today. Thank you so much to our wonderful guest and to you for listening. I really hope you enjoyed it. Just a reminder that you can find me over on the website www.themindfuldietitian.com.au, and please join actually quite a large group of wonderful and enthusiastic dietitians on the closed Facebook group, The Mindful Dietitian. The music you hear is called Happiness from Ben Sound, used under the Creative Commons license. Have a great day, everyone.